All right. Oh, always a pleasure to talk to our next guest. He's been with us before, and it's a great day to have him again, especially with what's happened this week. He's a former American lobbyist, and he was at the center of the extensive corruption investigation. It led to his conviction and to 21 other people either pleading guilty or being found guilty, including some White House officials, U.S. Representative Bob Ney, and 9 other lobbyists and congressional aides. He did some jail time, and since then, he's really been working and talking about reforming the way lobbying takes place in Congress, in our nation's capital. He is Mr. Jack Abramoff. Jack, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
So, I have to tell you, I rewatched Casino Jack, where Kevin Spacey plays you. I thought he did a great job. I thought it was really well done, but I wanted to ask you, did you have any thing to do with it? Were you, you know, did they talk to you about it? And either way, what did you think of it?
Well, the director came to visit me in prison and then came back to and brought Spacey with him. Wow. I spent about three hours with Spacey, a really great guy, very smart, and a lot of political knowledge. And political experience, by the way. He's a big Clinton guy.
Right.
And spent a lot of time with Clinton. So I really enjoyed chatting with him. I think I had read the screenplay before they arrived. Frankly, I didn't think the screenplay was very well done. It didn't have 3 discernible acts. There weren't a lot of character arcs. There wasn't a lot of tension and movement. And, you know, it just didn't have a lot of the classical elements of a good movie. I queried Spacey about it. He concurred with it, but they didn't really do much to fix it up, although he did make some alterations that improved it a little bit. I wasn't as enamored of the film, perhaps, as you were. I just thought from a filmmaking point of view, you know, and I spent a good chunk of my career making feckless movies, but
yeah,
filmmaking
exactly.
Movies.
Yeah.
You know, I thought it was unstructured. It was all over the place. And from my point of view, you know, look, you can never see a movie about yourself and somebody portraying you and think it's accurate. And frankly, a lot of it wasn't accurate. But, you know, I think they had a lot of fun making it. I didn't really have anything else to do with it other than that. And, you know, what can I tell you?
Yeah.
No, I guess it's nice to be played by Kevin Spacey, but that's pretty much all I can say.
Yeah, that would be the best part of it, I'd say. If it was me, I'd say, oh, okay, Kevin Spacey playing me. That's pretty cool. Yeah, I thought he did a great job. But I can see what you're saying as far as it kind of, you know, it was kind of all over the place. And, you know, some of the personal stuff between you and your wife and Scanlon and his fiance and stuff, I thought a lot of that probably could have been cut. But
yep.
But it's fascinating stuff because it's such a fascinating story, you know. Okay, so. Oh, I wanted you to tell folks about your film career because you've been doing that. From way back.
Yeah, I you know, I was in politics out of college and went to law school at night at Georgetown University while I worked for President Reagan. And I didn't get along too well with the chief of staff in the second second term, which was Don Regan.
Right.
And so
apparently nobody got along with him.
Yeah, there were a few there who, you know, I remember who were fond of him and, you know, people who had come with him from Wall Street to the White House. But, you know, it wasn't a personal issue with him. It was a work issue. It was very difficult to do what I had to do, which was to manage the grassroots lobbying operations with the direction that they wanted to go. But all right, you know, it is what it is. So I left at some point into the second term, and I had taken an entertainment law class at law school, and I decided that I would return to my base. I grew up in Beverly Hills, California, and try to make movies, and wasn't smart enough to realize I shouldn't have tried to make movies, so I wound up making a few movies that were action movies. I guess the most well-known of the unknown films was a film starring a guy named Dolph Lundgren,
right,
who's a wonderful, wonderful fella, an actor who's been in a lot of films, called Red Scorpion, which we made in Namibia in Africa.
Yeah, I remember that one. Yeah, Dolph, is he still around doing stuff? I haven't heard his name in a while. But he was great at that genre.
He's made 50 films, 5-0.
Wow.
It's unbelievable.
Wow.
Yeah, incredible career.
Are you still involved? You still involved in the film industry at all?
I am. I'm actually involved with we're making a film. We're in the process of making an action film that will probably be made in Mexico. And I guess I better not tell that to President Trump. Maybe he'll make us move up here. But it's an action film that takes place in Mexico, so we'll see if we get away with it. And I'm working on television shows as well.
Cool. Your book, basically an autobiography, Capital Punishment, The Hard Truth About Washington Corruption from America's Most Notorious Lobbyist. That came out after you got out of prison. I've read part of that, and I got to finish reading it, but it's fascinating.
Well, thanks. Thanks. It's, you know, I wasn't going to do a book when I went away to prison. I really wanted to just go away and stop all this, because whoever said that there's no such thing as bad publicity, frankly, didn't endure what I endured. I had nothing but bad publicity. But when I was in prison, they passed in 2007 this act called the Honest Leadership in Government Act,
right,
which, by the way, one of the attendant parts was the Office of Congressional Ethics, which is the latest brouhaha of the last few days. And I sent the act by my attorney and immediately saw that once again, this time under Pelosi's leadership, they had passed a reform bill that did nothing, really. I mean, there were a few tightenings here and there, and basically they did it again. And at first I laughed, kind of, there they go again. And then I started thinking, what am I doing here in prison if they really don't care about this anyway? And as I got angrier and angrier about it, I started making a list of things that what would I do if I really wanted to clean up Washington? What are the things that would really clean up Washington? And then I decided to write a book, not only to get that out, but also to get the story, what really happened in my case, out.
They should have read that. Everyone in Congress should have read that and responded, you know, appropriately with, because, I mean, who knows, has better ideas than you probably on the background of everything and how it all works. So then Monday night, the GOP gets together, and in their first act, they have a behind doors closed private meeting to try and gut the Office of Congressional Ethics. Your thoughts on that, sir? I mean, especially the first thing they do is so weird.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the problem with the Republicans in the Congress is, I think they're, and Democrats too, by the way, generally most people in Congress are decent people, but the Republicans tend to kind of lunge toward things that are a problem or they think is a problem without thinking about the optics of what's going on around them. And in this particular case, the Office of Congressional Ethics has some procedural problems. They have a difficulty, it seems, in keeping information from leaking out about people who they've exonerated.
Right.
Which is a real problem. I mean, these are politicians, so you can literally kill their career after they're exonerated and innocent, and then still it comes out. That's a really bad thing. So that and a few other things angered the members, and they wanted to do something about it. And that's fine. That's understandable. But
exactly.
You don't do it as your first thing, and
right,
especially after an election where the entire election is about either drain the swamp or get rid of the corruption or we're sick of the establishment. That is all the messaging of this election. And the very first thing anybody hears about from these guys is that they're getting rid of the Office of Congressional Ethics. That is the worst optics ever. And Trump, of course, tweeted out about it, which caused them to collapse in that effort. And I think the problem is that you had a bunch of angry members led by this Bob Goodlatte, who's
right,
the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, who also does not generally think about the optics of what he's doing politically. He's got a district in conservative Virginia, and he doesn't think about what necessarily what's going on in the rest of the country, perhaps. And unfortunately, the leadership which of the Republicans, which is so weak in the House, you know, Paul Ryan's a good guy, but very weak, Kevin McCarthy, they couldn't stop this from being approved, even though they were admonishing against it. Well,
yeah,
in the old days when Tom DeLay ran, was majority leader, you know, you would never have seen something like this. You know, there is no uprising of the members to do something stupid like this. So anyway, it happened. Everyone, of course, cried out, what are you doing, including Trump, especially Trump. And so they pulled back. But they just embarrassed themselves. I don't think it's going to be long-lasting. But what they should be doing, Steve, is they should be going out and they should be doing reform things. They shouldn't be getting rid of the Office of Congressional Ethics. They should be prosecuting an agenda to actually reform the system and get the money out of the special interest hands that goes into their pockets and end all that. That's what they should have done. That's what Trump talked about, by the way, in Gettysburg when he gave his talk there. And instead of pivoting off that and trying to reverse the unbelievably low ratings of Congress, you know, people would rather be with a cockroach than a congressman. Instead of fixing that, they did this. And it's just stunning.
Through all this, and after getting out of prison, you are an ethics reformer who speaks on the subject. Of course, there's the book. But has Congress ever asked you to come in and talk to them about reforming anything? I mean, I don't think so, but
of course not.
I think they should.
I have spoken in Kentucky to the state legislature, in Utah to the state legislature. There are states where politicians care about trying to do something about this stuff, but I don't say there are not people in Congress who are both, by the way, really good and not corrupt, or people who want to get rid of this system, but the preponderance of the members, the far majority of the members, don't want to deal with this because they don't think they're corrupt, first of all. They don't think there's a problem with the revolving door and with special interests giving the money, in essence, to buy results. They don't think that's a problem. And by the way, I don't want to be hypocritical. I didn't think it was a problem when I was in there either. Okay? That's the system. You live within a sort of a bubble in Washington.
Yeah.
But the rest of the country doesn't agree with this. I can tell you that much.
Wow. It's Michael Scanlon, right?
Michael Scanlon,
who was your partner, basically, in all this back.
Well, with the grassroots stuff.
Yeah.
My partner in the grassroots stuff. Yeah.
Do you two ever speak?
No, I haven't talked to Mike in a very long time. Unfortunately, what these kind of conflagrations do is that since everybody is literally swimming in a sea of fire to survive, people sort of go their own way. And unfortunately, Mike particularly, and many that I was very fond of, we don't really have contact because there were so many years when we weren't allowed to be in contact with each other because the case was being pursued. And, you know, I lost touch with so many of them. And, you know, I regret it. Obviously, these were my friends and colleagues. But, you know, that's life. You move on.
We're talking to former D.C. lobbyist Jack Abramoff. You mentioned Tom DeLay, and in the movie Casino Jack, he's portrayed as pretty close to you back during all this.
I was certainly friends with and close to Tom, one of many who was. We had a very nice relationship. Frankly, our relationship didn't really revolve around fundraising and politics and lobbying and things like that. We did have those discussions, of course, and we agreed on political issues up and down the block. But the discussions with Tom were really very interesting. He is a evangelical religious Christian. I'm an Orthodox Jew, and we would spend lots of time talking about the Bible and episodes within the Bible, the meaning, et cetera, like that. And we'd also had a very, very odd side discussion as well, which I would venture to say was unusual in everywhere in Washington, which was that his favorite music is opera music, and I was an opera minor in college. So we would have discussions, the only discussions I had in Washington, probably he did too, about opera with each other. So we had a very interesting relationship.
You're shown in the movie playing classical music on the piano. Is that right on?
Yeah, I do. I do play, not as well as I should or want to, but I do.
But Tom DeLay did get caught up in this scandal.
Yeah, well, you know, everybody around me got caught up in it, but Tom did not get taken down with my scandal because the truth is Tom didn't do anything wrong in terms of illegal in my scandal any more than any of the others who were investigated. And Tom was thoroughly investigated. Where Tom was taken down, and it was really tragic, was by a very political prosecutor in Austin, Texas. And it's something entirely unrelated to me, which even though it destroyed his political career, he was eventually correctly exonerated. But again, it's the old, Donovan from the Reagan administration. Where do I go to get my reputation back? Mm-hmm. And Tom DeLay is an important figure in the conservative movement today, which is great. He's a wonderful, wonderful person. I know that his detractors detest him, as mine do me, I guess. But I have to tell you, a more decent person. Very few people I've met are as decent as Tom.
Do you still consider yourself a Republican?
Yeah. Absolutely, although I don't know what a Republican means anymore with this election, but I'm a conservative and a Republican, and, you know, I'm uh, I support what I see is coming together is the Trump administration. I think there's some good things there. I'm particularly excited about his effort and attention to the drain the swamp side. But I think on many, many areas, he is surprising all of us in ways that I think a lot of people didn't think was imaginable. Let's see what happens, of course, when he becomes, you know, the president. But just his pre-president actions have been really incredible. So, I'm absolutely, I've always been a conservative, always been a Republican. I am now allowed to vote in my home state of Maryland, so I guess I can officially be part of a party. For a while, I was kind of a nomad out there. But,
Wow, what a story. Very cool. Jack Abramoff, one of the main reasons that they started the Office of Congressional Ethics, which they attempted to gut the other night, but then decided they better not mess with it. You think they might try again at some point? I mean, as we both agree, it was the dumbest thing they could have done right out of the gate.
Yeah, what they need to do is instead of just doing away with the whole thing, which they actually didn't even try to do that. They were just trying to move its jurisdiction.
Yeah.
But instead of doing that, what they need to do is to drill into the actual problems that everybody agrees are problems.
Right.
And try to solve those. I think that's the better move. But it should be done in the context of a wider and far-reaching reform bill that they can finally say to the American people, look, we've heard you're upset with Congress. We've heard about your views of Congress. And we're going to do something to try to clean this place up ourselves. And by the way, Trump cannot on his own do a lot of this stuff. He's got to get Congress to do a lot of it legislatively.
Right.
So hopefully he'll have a bully pulpit or bully Twitter or whatever it's called and get these guys to take some action. And if he does that alone, he'll be an amazingly impactful president of the United States.
As you and others have pointed out, it probably needs fine-tuning but not gutting, and it needs to be done not behind closed doors, right?
Right. Well, yeah. but a lot of things in Washington, just procedurally, the way the process is set up, and many of us are trying to come up with ideas to change it, but so many things take place behind so-called closed doors. Yeah. I mean, people will be astonished that virtually everything takes place in meetings that where the door is shut. So, there's a lot of folks talking about how do we make it more transparent. Some things, of course, we can't make more transparent, national security, et cetera, but this kind of stuff, I think it should be a national discussion. What do we want to do here? How do we want to clean up our system? And what are the ideas to do it? And not to gut it, but to clean it.
Right. I could do an hour at least with Jack Abramoff. I hope we can talk again soon through these Trump years, and I appreciate you taking the time so much.
My great honor and pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
All right. Take care, Jack. Wow.